Welcome back, friends. Sarah and I are taking up the idea, angels at our side, heavenly army help. We left off that the Lord has given us spiritual beings as our helpers and for the express purpose of spiritual warfare. Sacred scripture in Ephesians 6:12 talks about our fight as primarily against principalities. So when Paul is listing principalities, powers, dominions, virtues, those are some of the choirs, right, nine choirs of angels. He's listing choirs of spiritual realm. And for example, Lucifer, he was in the seraphic realm, the highest of the nine. He doesn't stop being a seraph. His rank doesn't stop because of his rebellion against our blessed Lord. He takes the attributes of that state and it's twisted to a very evil and demonic purpose. So, you know, in my mind, I know I can hear powers, principalities, virtues, and necessarily think, oh, we're talking about good angels. No, we're just talking about states within the angelic realm. Baptism confers the threefold office to each soul as priest, prophet, and king. You can go to 1270 in the Catechism, second edition, or earlier for that. To be a king is to rule with Christ. We see in Ephesians again, Ephesians is such a rich, rich book. It's a short little book, and so it makes a real good place to for reflection. We are going to turn off the mail. And we see that we are seated with Christ, with him in heavenly places. Seating shows that of authority. As a king or queen, or I like to think of it in terms of prince and princess, because that is always a nice reminder in my mind that I am a princess. So a princess is acting underneath a higher authority, right? The higher authority, the queen and the king, being our blessed Lord and his, in our mother, our Mary. So seated means authority, rule to command. So we, the baptized, in this threefold office of priest, prophet, and king, we have to mature in our understanding of the power and authority that we really have been given by Christ to advance his kingdom. In Luke 9:1 or Luke 10:19, we see a delegated, again, that reminding of prince or princess, we have a delegated power and authority from Jesus Christ himself to be rulers, to be kings and queens, prince and princesses, and rulers, good rulers, know where their arsenal and troops can be found.
Yeah, I think that at the same time that we are rapidly moving to a totalitarian society, you can see that that is an absolute rejection at the personal responsibility and personal authority. People who are aware of the fact that they have authority, or that they have, and you have authority, one is given authority because one has duties, right? I mean, you don't have authority to do whatever you want. You have authority to do what you must. And if there's something that you must do, then you are given the authority to do it, right? And that's where we are in terms of our Christian understanding of what authority means, right? But you can see that we are a people who are rejecting that authority right now, that we don't want personal responsibility. We don't want to be the ones who have any obligations or duties that we must fulfill. And so consequently, because we are unwilling to fulfill duties, we abrogate our authentic responsibility, and we are right now in the process of giving that authority that we own away for free. We want somebody else to take care of our health. We want someone else to take care of our you know, our car payments. We want somebody else to take care of our medical expenses. We want somebody to pay for our college expenses. We don't want any responsibilities whatsoever. But the problem with that is that once you abrogate that responsibility or that authority that you've been given, you are a slave. And nothing will make Satan happier than to enslave all of us. So it's an interesting time right now where we're watching the world really cede or yield their kingships, right? Yield the authority that's been given to them, and we are voluntarily putting ourselves back into an unnecessary slavery.
That's right. I just shortly before coming in, and I haven't researched it as well as I might want to, and I do want to do this, is this concept of mandatory vaccines. And I have scientific reasons why I think that mRNA and all of those, I have the religious reasons. I think anything that has been tainted with a Bill Gates or a Fauci or any of them gets put into the suspect pool and all of that. But let's suppose, and we have a few moments, so let's have a thought experience. Let's suppose that these proposed, and those are not vaccines, by the way, by the traditional definition, that's modifying your DNA. You see, you become a GMO. But let's suppose we have what has been considered a vaccine since the polio vaccine. It doesn't cause impotence or seizures or heart strokes, you know, the whole host of things that are breaking out with these guys.
Right.
Would it then still be okay for the government to mandate that thing? And in my heart, I have to say no, because the minute, and it comes to what you just said so beautifully, the minute we cede over a responsibility, God forbid, to the government, try taking that back.
Oh, absolutely. I was just actually discussing this. I don't know how many people in your audience have read Humanae Vitae. But one of the primary things that Paul VI actually says in there is that, and you can see, we are moving away from being a society that is based upon liberty and moving very, very rapidly to a society that is based on license. So the government is stepping in and not being the guarantor of rights that have been given to us by our creator, right? That are inalienable, from which we actually cannot licitly separate ourselves. We may do it, but to our detriment, because when we separate ourselves from these rights, we become slaves and we are not who we were created to be, which is free. You know, it says in scriptures, God created us free because he saw us already free as he is, right? But in Humanae Vitae, Paul VI, one of the things that he says is, if you grant permission to the government to say that this is okay, you will then find that you've given permission to the government to mandate its use. And this is exactly where we are. I mean, you know, you can say that that's an issue for birth control, but I mean, look at what China has done. China has now said that for the good of its society, they limited the number of children that a population could have to one child. Then they made it up to two. Now we're up to actually three children, but there's no freedom. When the government says that you may have one, two, or three children, you're just a slave and you have no personal autonomy. And this concept of a mandatory vaccination strikes at the very heart of the human having an awareness of themselves and a complete understanding of the autonomy that is imbued in them by God. You know, and I keep becoming very tired of people who say, well, love your neighbor, right? You have to love your neighbor. Okay, well, that is actually the second part of a two-part commandment, and it's only the first part of the clause. The first commandment is love God above all things, right? So until society is loving God above all things, their attempt to negotiate with me with the pious platitude of only one portion of the second clause strikes me as very disingenuous, because that second phrase is, and love your neighbor as yourself. There's a reason why on an airplane, when the masks come down, you are not only requested, you are told with an uncertain command that you must put the mask on your face before you put it on another. And it's the same thing with this vaccine. I love you only insofar as I love myself. And I would never ask you to do something with your body that I would never do with my own. Now, I would never say that you can't, but I would never say that you must. That is not an authority that's been given to us, nor to the government.
That is exactly correct. All right, my friends, let's talk about angelic troops in the next episode. Till then, fides et ratio.